friend. Well, actually, for too long of a time, we're classmates. And then I thought, like, we could be like this forever. But then sometimes some things happen that will shatter your trust in humanity. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it ever happened to you.
Yeah, definitely. I think everybody's had that experience.
No, because some people, you know how they are. They have this never-ending trust in human beings.
Yeah.
They would never get fed up.
I guess so. I think it depends on how you look at the situation and how much you learn from your previous choices. And also how you can kind of gather it for yourself that if one person is like this, it doesn't mean everybody else is. Mm-hmm. And what can I do to protect myself next time?
You know, there's a thing. I learn from my previous choices, but unfortunately the new choices as well, they do some unexpected things that would just make you believe that, okay, the generalization that I had upon people and upon how human beings are have always been true. And I am just trying so hard to change the reality.
Oh, no. What happened?
I'm not going to be very into detail. I'm just going to give you the gist of it. So when you trust someone and you start to say that, okay, she knows me better than I know myself. Well, not better than I know myself. That's going to be exaggeration. She knows me at least just like a friend. She knows about me, but then suddenly she comes to make some assessments about you, mm-hmm. some comments on you that when you just hear them, they're just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You have some good intentions in your mind when you do something, but then you come to see that people are going to judge you the other way around, totally the opposite.
Yeah, and it's very hurtful when you have trusted somebody and you think them as a friend and you didn't expect that behavior from
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Like you could, that behavior wouldn't hurt you if it was from a stranger, mm-hmm. but because it's from somebody you trusted, it feels like you've been stabbed in the back.
You called a friend. Yeah. God, that's too much of a word, you know? It connotates too much of passion. When I say friend, that means soulmate. That means alter ego. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, what we see in real life is a different thing. Now, let's go for a short break, and then we'll go in between the lines. Welcome back. This is Youth Station. Asma and Zahra, we are talking about trust, human beings, and life. Yeah. Well, I told you about my experience with my friend and how hard and harsh and excruciating it is when you are daggered with your friends. So this feels so
backstabbed.
Tragic. But then it's a little bit more complicated than what we're just talking about it. As you said, when my trust is shattered once, I may apply it to all the people and say, okay, there is no one whom I can trust. And then that would be bad for me psychologically, because the world for a person who does not trust anyone is going to be a dark place. And tolerating that world is going to be even a darker thing.
I think it's important to understand who to trust, to what extent, in what topic. Mm-hmm. For example, in verses of the Quran and in Riwayat, we have a lot of sayings on the lines of the only person you can ever trust to the fullest extent is God.
Of course.
And why? Because when you put your trust in God, God, first of all, has power. He can do something about the thing you've entrusted him with. Second of all, he is obviously trustworthy. He's not going to go try to ruin you behind mm-hmm. your back. Third of all, he would never turn against you. There is no reason for him to ever turn against you.
Yeah.
He doesn't gain anything. People who break each other's trust oftentimes do it for the sake of another goal, another gain.
But, sort of benefit.
Yeah, a benefit. And benefit is for somebody who is lacking something, who needs something, and therefore is willing to sacrifice that that trust and that friendship and relationship they have to gain that mm-hmm. new thing. But God doesn't need to do that. So God is the most trustworthy person, most trustworthy being we can put our trust into.
Yeah.
When you want to go buy a piece of, like, a napkin from a store, you have to have some amount of trust to be like, when I give this money to this person, they're going to give me a product. You can't live life without trusting anybody.
Exactly.
But it's important to know what to trust who with. You trust that person to the extent they have shown you that they are trustworthy. And only in that topic. You're never going to ask the person running the supermarket on where you can, I don't know, find the best home to buy if you don't know them.
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I guess every one of us has got a definition for trust. How I define trust for myself is going to be different from how you define that. But according to the definition that every single one of us attribute to trust, the amount of hurt that we're going to feel is going to be different. Mm-hmm. So sometimes trust means so full, at its fullest meaning, I give it that much of importance that when I just feel being, hurt from somebody whom I trusted, it feels like the entire world has been collapsing around my eyes. Everything is getting shattered and nothing else has got a meaning. And by the way, the story I just told you was just a hint to get the idea. I'm sure that every single one of us has got an experience, a story, a plot that we have experienced, which has been way too excruciating than what I just said. It happens among families, among, wife and husband. It happens among, which is going to be so sad.
That's very painful.
Yeah, and so painful. And I'm sure it's unforgettable.
Yeah.
But then how to react when you have been fed down, when you've been let down, it's very important as well.
Yeah, how to bounce back and build yourself up again and learn how to trust more wisely next time.
Exactly. What do you usually do in those situations? How do you gain it all back?
I think some things that are really important in relationships that people experience their trust being broken is to not let that pain fester inside of them and turn into an open wound. Because when that happens, they become a scared person. They have a hard time communicating or opening up to other people ever again. And so I think it's important to always, whether it means going to a counselor, going
to a therapist,
trying to overcome that event that happened and learn something from it, close it up and put it behind you.
Exactly.
Don't fester in it and don't just like sit in it and let it mm-hmm. kind of bubble and boil your life.
I guess the best way to put it behind, because when we say, okay, turn the page and close that book forever, it's going to sound so easy, but practically what happens is that it's very difficult. So I suppose the best way to do this practically is to engage yourself with a lot of new stuff. For example, if there's any activity, any hobby you have always wanted to do, it's the best time for you to get involved in it. If there's any book you wanted to study, I guess this is the best time for you to go for it. As for me, myself, whenever I go through some sad, tragic experiences, I go and delve myself into watching too much of movies.
Oh, no.
You know why? The thing is that whenever I get into another story, I totally feel like I'm a part of that story.
Mm-hmm.
So I forget about my own reality. The thing that happens is that you're going to forget about the reality and get into a fictional world.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a kind of a thing that works for me. Maybe that is not going to work for other people,
obviously,
but everybody has got a strategy.
Obviously, a good story, like one that you can, through that story, you can, without your own pain, go and kind of live through another person's life and how they overcome their difficulties, can be very helpful in helping you overcome it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if it's a good story and if it's a good topic, it's just important to always make sure that you don't run away from the problem.
So, right now, I guess it's the best time for us to go for a very short break, and then we'll be back for the last part of today's episode.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to
Youth Station.
We were talking about trust and how we can overcome events when our trust is broken. And
yeah.
What are some methods that...
When people let us down, which happens usually.
How can we build ourselves back up and how can we deal with the situation that's happened?
Yeah, we said that even in our narration. We have that we should not trust everybody so much.
Yeah, yeah.
So if there's any secret for yourself, it's better that you keep it for yourself because nobody is going to guard it as your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So once it's out of your control. So this is for the first part. Actually, this is just one way of trust being broken, to trust someone with a secret. Now, the other sort of trust is the passion you give people and it's not given back to you.
Yeah.
And they let you down. With their behavior.
When you invest in something, when you put care and attention for somebody and they don't
Again,
do the
we
same.
Have it in our narration that if you do someone something good, do not do it with expectation. God is going to reward you.
Mm-hmm.
So let the reward be in God's hand. So when I do something good for someone without any expectations, knowing that God is going to be the one who's going to pay me back, it's going to soothe me and I would never wait for the other people to pay me back.
And so therefore kind of putting your trust in when you do a good action, putting your trust in God that God will return it to you instead of in that person. Because that person, whether it's because of like environmental, like, you know,
or even
things
maybe
that happen,
according to their character, because I can say it. Confidently that many people are selfish.
Yeah.
And
or selfish not even necessarily in a evil way. Like parents, like children, small children, or like newborns.
Yeah.
By some definitions they may be considered selfish. But parents still out of their own love and out of their own care do whatever they can for the child.
Yeah.
And happy parents end up being parents who say, I'm doing this, but I'm putting my trust in God that God will pay me back.
So, first lesson to be understood is that don't pin your hopes on human being.
Yeah.
The only one you should trust more than anyone else in this world is Allah himself. And second of all, if by any chance anyone did that to you and broke your trust, the best thing for you to do and the best way to actually punish them is to get back to yourself, to your true self, not the one who is broken or sad or being so impressed by the event that happened to them. It's difficult. I know what I'm saying is sort of very utopian story. But then we can try because we're human beings. And if we trust Allah with the intention that he would give you the patience to tolerate the situation, he wouldn't let you down.
This
was all the time that we had for today's episode. Sadly, we have to say bye. So I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullah.
Diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, Riyad Mansour, has angrily charged Israel with carrying out the deadly attack on the Al-Ahli hospital in central Gaza, calling Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a liar for blaming the strike on the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance group. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The English website of the Al Jazeera Television has covered this story and tells us more. Experts express doubt over the authenticity of an intercepted audio recording released by Israel, purporting to show two Hamas fighters putting the blame for the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital attack on the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance group. Palestinian authorities announced hundreds of people were martyred in the blast that was caused by an Israeli air raid. The Zionist regime claims the explosion was the result of a rocket launched by the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance group. The rocket misfired. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad has rejected the allegation. In an investigation into the bombing published by Britain's Channel 4 News, the broadcaster said the two independent Arab journalists had deduced that the language used in the recording, as well as the accent, syntax and tone, led them to believe that the recording was not authentic. The investigation pointed out the contradictory information put forward by the Israelis. For example, in the recent Israeli presentation, two different locations were given for the alleged Islamic Jihad rocket's launch site. On Wednesday, 18th of October, Hamas refuted any allegations associating them with the bombing of the hospital and said there is conclusive evidence that the Israeli occupation committed this crime. Since the start of this war, the occupation has not distinguished between civilian and military targets and has bombed emergency services, ambulances and the civil defense. It also states, before and after the bombing of the hospital, resistance fighters did not fire any missile towards the occupied territories. The occupation forces' warning sirens did not sound, and the Iron Dome did not sound. The occupation claims this was carried out by the resistance fighters, but how could they distinguish the missiles immediately after they launched? It added, "It is known that the resistance missiles are homemade and do not have the destructive power that kills hundreds of people at once." Throughout the history of previous confrontations and this one, no resistance missile has caused losses amounting to what this massacre caused. The statement also said that video footage of the moment the hospital was bombed shows direct evidence that Israel was responsible for it because it matches the flames, sound and explosion that Israel committed throughout the past days of aggression, which proves that the missile was Israeli. The Palestinian Health Ministry said in a statement, "The Al-Ahli Hospital was sheltering thousands of displaced people when it was bombed on Tuesday, 17th of October. Earlier, Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh said, "The US is responsible for the hospital attack because of the cover it gives to the Israeli aggression." The website of Middle East Eye has also covered the same story and tells us more. Riyad Mansour, the Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations, said Israel has denied its bombing of Gaza's Al-Ahli Arab Hospital, which martyred at least 500 people and wounded hundreds of others. In a speech to the United Nations Security Council, Riyad Mansour said Israel denied its responsibility for the massacre like it did with the Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. It blamed the Palestinians for their own death. Following the news that the U.S. vetoed the resolution that would have paved the way for a humanitarian pause of the war, he said, "This is the kind of war where you know how it starts, but you have no clue how it ends. It should be stopped immediately." Meanwhile, Mustafa Barghouti, leader of the Palestinian National Initiative, stated that the Israeli military is sharing misleading disinformation regarding the explosion on the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza. Mustafa Barghouti is a former minister in a Palestinian unity government and a prominent and unaligned activist for Palestinian rights. He added, "The Israeli military has a consistent track record of lying on many occasions regarding its crimes, saying it has changed its official narrative several times in order to avoid culpability." Mustafa Barghouti said the Israelis had already threatened the hospital with evacuation, but the staff refused to leave because it was impossible to transfer critical patients without them dying. Barghouti added, "The World Health Organization, the WHO, has said moving them would be a death sentence." In a statement on Saturday, 14th of October, the World Health Organization said it strongly condemns Israel's repeated orders for the evacuation of 22 hospitals treating more than 2,000 inpatients in northern Gaza. The forced evacuation of patients and healthcare workers will further worsen the humanitarian and public health catastrophe unfolding in Gaza. Iran's Fars news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Palestinian ambassador to the United Nations Riyad Mansour angrily charged Israel with carrying out the deadly attack at the Al-Ahli hospital in central Gaza, calling the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu a liar for blaming the strike on the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance group. Riyad Mansour said during a press conference at the United Nations headquarters, "Now they changed the story to try to blame the Palestinians, but it's a lie. Netanyahu is a liar." His digital spokesperson tweeted that Israel did the hit thinking that there is, around this hospital, a base for Hamas, and then he deleted that tweet. Tal Heinrich, a spokesperson for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, told CNN on Tuesday, 17th of October, that Israeli forces do not target hospitals, claiming, "We only target Hamas strongholds and arms depots." Riyad Mansour added, "They're responsible for that crime and they cannot fabricate stories to deal with it." Mansour pointed out that a spokesman for the Israeli military previously suggested that hospitals could be possible targets of Israeli aggression and should be evacuated. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance group has also denounced Israel's accusations that it was responsible for the hospital strike. In a statement, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad group said, "The Zionist enemy is trying hard to evade its responsibilities for the brutal massacring that it committed by bombing the Baptist Arab National Hospital in Gaza through his usual fabrication of lies and through pointing the finger of blame at the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement." In its latest report, the United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reveals that 25% of the Gaza Strip's residential buildings have been destroyed in the Israeli airstrikes. Meanwhile, displaced Palestinians gathered at the Church of St. Porphyrius, a Greek Orthodox church in central Gaza City, have been targeted in an Israeli air raid, leading to the martyrdom of tens of Palestinians and injury of many more. The Orthodox Patriarch of Al-Quds expressed his strongest condemnation of the air assault on the church compound in Gaza. The Orthodox Patriarch of Al-Quds said in a statement, "Targeting churches and their institutions, along with the shelters they provide to protect innocent citizens, especially children and women who have lost their homes due to the Israeli airstrikes on residential areas over the past few days, constitutes a war crime and cannot be ignored."
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Reformation of the Mind. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today we would like to delve a little bit deeper into the topic of reformation of the mind. We said reformation, which is a very famous and popular trend in the society nowadays, it is not necessarily confined to our actions. It has to do with our mindset. So reformation of mind comes before we start to see the change in an individual or the society. Whatever change and reformation we bring about in ourselves for the sake of this dunya is limited in scope, and we will slowly start to lose its effectiveness. The only way to bring about a permanent and effective transformation is to base this transformation on the will of Allah and for the sake of Allah. Reformation of the mind and actions for Allah and others, you know, combined, when we kind of give them two different portions, it's a form of shirk. Allah says in the Holy Quran, chapter 18, verse number 110, "Whoever hopes to meet his Lord, he should do good deeds and not join anyone in the service of his Lord." You know, sometimes we do things with dual motives. This is what Quran is stopping us from. Do not join anyone in service of his Lord. Try to do it purely for Allah's sake only. You may even wonder, is it even doable? Well, the answer is yes. Allah says in the Holy Quran, chapter 2, verse number 207, "And among men is he who sells himself to seek the pleasure of Allah, and Allah is affectionate to his servants." We look towards Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they are the prime example and the manifestation of this verse. Then you look at the shuhada and the martyrs of Islam. They have all managed to do it one way or the other. So this is a source of appreciation and encouragement for us to tread that path. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the reformation of the mind, and we said that the actions, the good actions, the reformed actions are the outcome of the reformation of the mind. Once our mind is reformed, our actions will follow. Now, when we reform ourselves, we said that the sincere obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the criteria. Without that, there is no true reformation taking place. And having partners with Allah is a form of shirk. So not making partners with Allah is difficult, but doable. At times, we think we are smart. We can hide our intentions from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We forget that He is all-knowing. Dear listeners, remember, Allah sees what you do. Allah says in the Holy Quran, "And the parable of those who spend their property to seek the pleasure of Allah and for the certainty of their soul, is as the parable of a garden on elevated ground, upon which heavy rain falls, so it brings its fruit twofold. But if heavy rain does not fall upon it, then light rain is sufficient, and Allah sees what you do. Allah is very explicit. Every single thing that you do, Allah sees it. Let me take it to the next level. Every single thing that you think, Allah is informed about it. Every single thing that is in our hearts, Allah is the knower of it. So brothers and sisters, the true reformation calls for the reformation of mind, heart, and soul. Without associating any partners with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, this process, if done properly for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it guarantees our dunya and akhirah, this world and the hereafter. So let's, inshallah, together try to make it happen.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
Andrei Kostin, CEO of Russia's second largest bank, VTB, has said the Global South should establish a new financial system to mitigate the risks posed by the West. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Andrei Kostin, CEO of Russia's second largest bank, VTB, told RT on the sidelines of Eastern Economic Forum recently, "The dollar and the entire Western financial system built around it have been jeopardized by the sanctions on Russia." Asked about Russia's push towards switching trade to national currencies, Kostin responded that it is done out of necessity rather than a targeted attempt to undermine the greenback. He stated, "The dollar is illegally used as a weapon. It should not be done like this. We are talking about finance and the economy. Why should it be used for other purposes than this? It should be free from political and geopolitical risks. That's the only reason for de-dollarization." To illustrate his point, the banker quoted a famous phrase from the Godfather movie, "Finance is a gun, politics is knowing when to pull the trigger." He explained, "And that is what we saw. The politicians in the West pulled the trigger and it's been used against Russia. And not only Russia, but other countries." Kostin noted that while a decade ago nobody wanted to use local currencies in cross-border transactions and were content with using the dollar, now more and more countries are re-evaluating this stance. Kostin said, "We raised the question of using local currencies 10 years ago, but nobody wanted it at the time. Why? They said, we can use the dollar. It's good. And it was good until we faced the situation when America started to threaten us, threaten other countries, saying, if you don't do this, if you don't do that, we will cut you off from the dollar. If they had not behaved like this, we would never have raised this question. Constein said that it is high time for countries in the global south to create their own financial system based on national currencies. He stated, "It is the right time for the global south to start to build up this system because, though the global south removed the colonial system politically after the Second World War, the colonial system in the financial sector still exists. The empire built by the US with the help of its allies still works." Constein added that it is now very clear to the most of the world that if we continue like this, there will be a threat of the US using the financial system as a weapon. The banker noted, however, that the idea is not to fight the Western financial system, but to build a parallel system that will work to the benefit of the global South. He said, "We see big changes in the balance of economic power in the world with such countries as China, Arab countries, and that allows us to create a different system which would be based on different principles. Principles of independence, sovereignty, the use of currencies other than the dollar and euro." Constein first outlined his idea for a new financial system at the Financial Congress organized by the Russian Central Bank in July. His proposal included four primary principles: replacing SWIFT with a new messaging system, replacing US-linked correspondent relationships among banks with horizontal links among local banks based on blockchain technology, creating an international depository settlement hub in the Persian Gulf to replace EU-based Euroclear and Clearstream, and creating new instruments for raising capital instead of using foreign currency bonds that are linked to the West. According to Sputnik, the process of de-dollarization on a world scale will be neither a fast nor an easy one, but it is definitely possible in the future, the dean of the Faculty of International Relations at New Era University said. Speaking on the sidelines of the Eastern Economic Forum, EEF, Carlos Tabunda noted that de-dollarization has become the buzzword of late amid the tectonic shifts taking place in the global economic order. Participants of Russia's 8th Eastern Economic Forum, EEF, hosted in the city of Vladivostok from September 10 to 13th, have similarly been weighing in on the prospects of cutting back global reliance on the greenback, Sputnik reported. Many countries remain tightly linked to the American greenback, said the Philippine expert, which explains why the de-dollarization process is still a big challenge. China and Russia, along with other nations spearheading the de-dollarization process, still have a long way to go before reliance on the greenback can be toppled, Tabunda continued. Ways to sidestep the dollar and Western-dominated financial institutions via expanded trade in local currencies have been among the key items on the agenda of last month's three-day summit of the BRICS group of major emerging economies, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, which wrapped up on August 24th in Johannesburg. The gathering ended with an announced expansion with Iran, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Ethiopia, Argentina, and the UAE invited to join the club. At the event, BRICS stressed the importance of encouraging the use of local currencies in international trade and financial transactions between members of the group as well as their trading partners. This shift from dollar use took on a new significance amid expanded weaponization of the major reserve currency by Washington in order to achieve its geopolitical objectives. Furthermore, the dollar's increasingly perilous global position amid prospects of a recession in the United States has also fueled the dollar ditching debate.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. What I would like to say is that the event of the Sacred Defense is a prominent, important period in our country's history. In terms of achievements, there are not limited to just a couple of achievements. If someone were to look into the achievements of the Sacred Defense, they could write tens of volumes of a book in the field. Another achievement of the Sacred Defense was that it expanded our frontiers. I am not speaking of geographical borders. We did not seek to expand our geographical borders, neither at that time nor now. We are not seeking to expand our geographical borders. The Sacred Defense expanded our other frontiers, such as the frontier of resistance. This is an example. Today, the concept of resistance and the element of resistance is an established element. There is resistance in Palestine, there is resistance in West Asia, and there is resistance in various other countries. There is resistance in Iraq. There is resistance in Iran and in various places.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Sacred Defense raised and promoted the idea of resistance around the world. It established resistance in many parts of the world. We ourselves may find it hard to believe that the actions of the Iranian nation have had such an impact in distant countries. But they have had such an impact. We have information about this. I do not wish to name the countries. A large number of the Iranian nation's activities have served as a model for many people in the East, in Asia, in Africa, and also in Latin America. This is what expanding frontiers means. Our intellectual and cognitive borders have been expanded. This is a nation's greatest success to be able to expand its own culture, understanding, knowledge and wishes in the world. This mainly took place by the way of the sacred defense. The 8 years of the sacred defense worked miracles in this aspect. It spread the culture of self-reliance.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
In the limelight.
Rather than demand an immediate ceasefire, the Biden administration is actively working to further provide cover for the Zionist regime's atrocities in Gaza. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, a few days ago, as the Zionist regime plunged Gaza into darkness by cutting off food, water, electricity, fuel, medical supplies, and more amid non-stop Israeli regime airstrikes and shelling, Mohammad Abu Rukbeh, senior Gaza field researcher at Defense for Children International, Palestine, DCIP, wrote and shared an account of his day. As Mohammad took his wife and 4 young children from place to place, seeking somewhere safe, Palestinian civil defense teams were recovering a woman's body in pieces from the rubble of a building on the street they walked along. Despite Mohammad's attempt to shield this horrific scene from his children's eyes, they saw and they screamed. His 10-year-old son, Karam, was completely frozen, unable to walk. Knowing they must continue moving in search of somewhere safe, Mohammad picked up Karam and carried him. That one moment could lead to years of psychological trauma for any child. But for children in Gaza, that moment was just one of a seemingly never-ending list of traumas unleashed by the Zionist regime. In Gaza, where the Zionist regime forces have killed thousands of Palestinian children in little more than a week, injured even more, and displaced hundreds of thousands, not a single child is safe right now. To say that the world has failed Palestinian children is a colossal understatement. Most of the world leaders led by the United States and the European Union have allowed and enabled Israeli regime forces to kill, injure, torture, and detain Palestinian children with complete impunity for decades. Palestinian children in Gaza have lived 16 years under Israeli regime siege, where children with cancer must obtain a permit to seek medical care outside of Gaza, and where The Zionist regime controls every item and person that enters and leaves. This is the reality in Gaza that the West has allowed Israeli regime authorities to enact. And then, of course, there are bombs. In less than a week, the Zionist regime forces have dropped more than 6,000 bombs on the Gaza Strip, or about one every 30 seconds. The Zionist regime airstrikes, shells, and white phosphorus have practically been invited by U.S. President Joe Biden, who has repeatedly expressed the U.S. unwavering support for the regime of Israel, indicating that the Biden administration would back whatever Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his military do next. Rather than demand an immediate ceasefire, as the Zionist regime forces destroy Palestinian civilian life in Gaza, the Biden administration is actively working to further provide cover for Israeli regime forces by discouraging U.S. diplomats from publicly saying the terms de-escalation, ceasefire, end to violence, bloodshed, and restoring calm. At DCIP, we are sounding the alarm for genocide. The Zionist regime forces and authorities have made their intentions clear to carry out a second Nakba and completely eradicate the Palestinian people. They are bombing whole city blocks, wiping entire families from civil register, and cutting off electricity, fuel, and water from hospitals providing life-saving care. Under international law, genocide is prohibited and constitutes the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group with the aim of destroying that nation or group in whole or in part. Genocide can result from killing or by creating conditions of life that are so unbearable it brings about the group's destruction. There are already over 1,000 Palestinian children in Gaza killed during this Israeli regime military offensive. In barely more than a week, Israeli regime forces have obliterated twice as many children as in 2014, when they killed at least 535 Palestinian children over 50 days. Countless more are injured and missing, and surely there are even more children and their families under the rubble whose names we may never know. The Palestinian children who have so far survived the Zionist regime's latest brutal assault on Palestinians in Gaza have left their homes searching for somewhere, not in ruins, to wait out the bombs. But even their parents cannot keep them safe, try as they might to shield their children from the carnage. Instead, all they can do is pick them up and try to stay alive. No matter what Israeli regime forces do next, Palestinian children have already paid the price, and the U.S. and the international community are complicit in the Zionist regime's campaign of genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. According to Truth Out, the Rome Statute provides that an individual can be convicted of genocide in the ICC if he or she aids, abets, or otherwise assists in the commission or attempts commission of genocide, which includes providing the means for its commission. In addition to $3.8 billion a year, the U.S. furnishes the Zionist regime for military assistance. The Biden administration is sending overwhelming firepower and providing diplomatic cover for the Zionist regime's war on the Palestinian people. One U.S. aircraft carrier with the strike group is already in the Eastern Mediterranean, and a second one is headed there now. Three marine warships carrying thousands of Marines are en route to the area. U.S. Special Operations Forces are helping the Israeli regime military with planning and intelligence. War Secretary of the United States, Lloyd Austin, ordered 2,000 U.S. forces, which will likely include Air Force and Army personnel, to prepare for deployment. And U.S. President Joe Biden has never condemned the Zionist regime's indiscriminate killing, starvation, and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians in Gaza.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria held a peaceful protest after Friday prayers at the National Mosque in the capital, Abuja. The demonstrators chanted slogans condemning the Israeli attacks on Gaza, which has resulted in the killing of thousands of Palestinians. They further condemned the Western refusal to call for a ceasefire and the support that the United States and European countries give to the Israelis. The demonstrators said they fully support the Palestinians.
The Islamic movement has been calling for justice for the Palestinians for more than four decades. It's not just now that the Islamic movement started. The Islamic movement started from the beginning. It's one of the frontiers of calling for justice.
Be free, Palestine!
The demonstrators expressed solidarity with the people of Palestine, but regretted that many people still do not understand the motives of the Israelis, who have continued to oppress the Palestinians for several decades. They explained that the occupation of Palestinian lands and the systematic murder of innocent people, including women and children, is part of a grand plan of the Zionists.
Some people are still saying Israelis are acting on defense. What defense? Yesterday, if you feel they are killing Muslims, yesterday they went and destroyed a church of 1,600 years. They have destroyed it yesterday. Today, they have attacked another mosque of 1,400 years of existence. So they are killing Muslim, Christian, whoever they see, they kill him. It's Zionism that is fighting humanity.
Meanwhile, Muslim organizations under the Supreme Council for Sharia in Nigeria have condemned Israelis' genocide in the Gaza Strip. They also called on the Nigerian government to urgently review its relations with the regime. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
Yemenis have taken to the streets for the second day in a row to show their solidarity with Palestinians as Israel continues its brutal attacks on the Gaza Strip. During the demonstration, protesters also praised the latest military actions, which targeted U.S. military assets in the region. According to reports, three missiles, which were launched from Yemen, targeted U.S. Navy warships in the Red Sea. This was also followed by other attacks on the U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in recent days.
I would like to send a message to the people of Gaza. By will of Allah, we are not going to enjoy food or drink without fighting alongside you. We are calling on the leaders to open the borders so we can join you in jihad.
From here in Yemen, I would like to send a message to the Zionist occupiers and aggressors. We will not allow you to get away with your crimes. We are coming for you. You will certainly see us soon in a place where you had hoped never to see us.
The Ansarullah government has not yet confirmed that it was behind the aerial attacks. However, the leader of Yemen's revolution, Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi, had said in the past that U.S. military assets would be targeted if the country joins the war against Palestinians.
We are not only going to march the streets to protest, but we are also ready to go to the battlefield to defend Islam, defend our lands, and defend Al-Aqsa. We are not like the Saudis and Emirates who are normalizing ties with Israel. They are the biggest traitors.
It is not clear how long the war will take. Comments and actions by Israel and its ally, the U.S., indicate that it's going to be a long war. Speakers during Friday prayers called on worshippers to protest daily in solidarity with Palestinians. This as the Yemeni government explores strategic military options that can be adopted to help end the bloodshed in Palestine. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.